Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Our guest tonight is Nolan Dallam, media director of the World Series of Poker, which will be firing up again in Las Vegas later this month. We'll be talking to Nolan in a few minutes, but as always, our guests are welcome to chime in early if they feel they have something to say about whatever we're talking about before their official segment. We get questions addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. This past week, we received a question from Doug in Boston. Now, he only gets to Vegas 1 week a year. He mentions that a lot of the promotions we talk about and analyze on the air seem to be geared towards locals. He wants to know what opportunities he should attempt to exploit on a once-a-year basis. And presumably video poker, which is what I can speak to authoritatively. And before we answer, we would need to know way more information to address this. Is he primarily coming for a convention, and so he's going to have a couple hours a day to gamble max? Is he coming here primarily to gamble? Does he have a travel companion with special needs or desires, like do they have to see a show every night, or does he have to stay on the strip, or do they have to have childcare in the casino, etc.? So all these kind of, you know, are you established at a casino where you're going to get free rooms, meals, airfare, and or other goodies, or are you playing from scratch? Do you have any flexibility about when you travel? Now, the South Point, you know in advance that on almost all holidays, defined rather loosely, they have double points. And that's a good time to play if you're playing in the nickel to $2 range. If you're playing that range, they have some of the best video poker in town, and on double point days, it's even better. So if you can schedule your trip, that would be a good time. You need to play at a casino to your liking in order to get the offers from them, and you need to play enough so that you get offers next time. So playing a little bit at all casinos means you're going to play retail next time, and so at minimum you have to play at whatever casino that you're getting your main offers are, and you need to pick your casino based on what you play. If you're a quarter player, forget about staying on the strip. It's just not a good gamble. And so you play quarter games enough to get good comps on a strip, you are paying more than retail. So there are plenty of local casinos in town with good games, and many of them give deals to out-of-towners. If you're only coming once a year, cash out all your points before you go home. A lot of the casinos have deals where points expire after 13 months or so. So you may think you're going to come back a year from now, but sometimes things happen. And so if things expire, then you're SOL. Out-of-towners probably should do the research beforehand so that they know when they're going to play. One of the best websites for this is VP Free 2. VP is in video poker. Free is in free. And the number 2.com. And it lists every good game in almost every casino in the country. It's not 100% accurate, but it's pretty close. And so if you've been spending a week in Vegas, you probably don't want to be spending 5 days scouting. Scouting takes time. The information you gain is usually short-lived. And so you should know pretty well before you get here what you're going to do. Michael, do you have any comment on any of this?
I agree with everything you said. If you have any friends that live or come to Vegas more frequently that play whatever you play, you might ask them for any tips for any hot promotions. As you said, I would not go for mailers because you're not going to be able to enjoy them. So I would try to hit whatever good promotion is going on. For example, if you're here now, the Riviera promotion, and our multiple point days are another good idea, which you said. So it really depends on what you play, what level, and when you're here.
Speaking of the Riviera, last week we talked about a new member promotion at the Riviera. We said at the time, this is probably too good to last, so if you're going to hit it soon. And so you had a friend that you went a couple days ago, Shaq. What did you find out?
Yeah, Monday evening I went there with a friend, and I found out that in addition to all the limitations they already had the previous time I was there, they added a new rule that any machine that had a sticker on it that said this machine is ineligible for the grand in a day promotion or whatever they call it, then don't play that one. And they pretty much put these stickers on the machines at a $5 denomination and higher. So it's
actually anything over $1, which could include $2 machines.
Okay. I thought that I saw $1 and $2 machines open, but could be mistaken. Anyway, what I decided to advise him to play was a 5-cent Coyote Moon game that between maximum lines and maximum coins per line, it was $20, a $20 bet at a time, which was definitely still worth doing, but the promotion has been significantly watered down. But it's still going on, still worth doing, so I would hit it while it lasts.
Okay. We got an email from a man named Tim who wanted us to analyze a promotion in Reno, but he wouldn't tell us exactly where this promotion was. I guess he didn't want Mike and me to come up there and compete with him, or maybe he didn't want us to announce it on the air. So now sometimes Mike and I will analyze a promotion and talk about it on the air if we think it's of wide enough interest. But our purpose here isn't to give out free consulting to strangers. So I emailed Tim back and said, if he gave us all the information, including the casino, and if we thought it was suitable for the air, we'd talk about it on the air. And if he wanted private consultation, then send me a check for $500, and I will think about it and give him an hour or two of my best advice. So far, he hasn't emailed us back. Can't say I'm really surprised. Michael, when you get these kind of questions, how do you handle it?
I applaud the way you did it, and I sometimes answer it that way. Sometimes I try to be a little bit nicer. But, yeah, a lot of people in the whole world seem to think
that... I think I was insulted, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, a lot of people out there seem to think that I'm running a free mathematical and gambling tutoring service for the whole world. And no, I'm not. You know, besides running my websites and my various other business interests, I have three kids and not a whole lot of spare time. However, you know, I have the radio show and my websites, and I like to write about promotions. So I'm all ears to hear about a new promotion if you tell me where it is. So I might write about it. And you have every right to try to swear me to secrecy. And if I think the promotion's a good one, I might agree to that and just do it myself. So, but, you know, there's trade-offs in this world. And, you know, I just don't think that it is kosher to ask for something and give nothing back.
All right. Let's talk about Nolan Dalla. He's a poker player and a writer. I highly recommend his biography of Stu Unger, arguably the best poker player ever, who died almost 15 years ago from drug abuse. He called One of a Kind. The book was called One of a Kind. Since 2002, Nolan has been the media director for the World Series of Poker, which has been called the highest-paying sporting event in the world. This year's World Series of Poker begins later this month, and we very much appreciate him taking time out of a busy schedule to come and talk with us. Nolan Dalla, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dancer and Mr. Shackelford. It is a great pleasure and honor to be with you once again.
Nobody calls us Mr. He must be angling for a repeat visit here. All right. Within the past week, Amarillo Slim Preston passed away. I first became aware of the World Series of Poker 40 years ago, shortly after Slim won the main event in 1972, and then appeared on Johnny Carson and other shows talking about it. Nolan, please tell our listeners the impact Amarillo Slim had on bringing positive attention to the World Series of Poker.
Yeah, sure, Bob. You know, the three of us sitting here on this radio show tonight are really showing our ages here, because if you're under the age of 30, if you're under the age of 30 and listening to me right now, you're the watershed moment for most poker players under the age of 30 was Chris Moneymaker winning the World Series of Poker some 9 years ago in 2003. That revolutionized, that changed everything in this game. A generation earlier, as you point out, in 1972, the most colorful, most interesting, one of the most interesting gamblers of all time won the World Series of Poker. He defeated a relatively small lineup, a tiny lineup compared with today's numbers, beating essentially only six people and winning the quote-unquote world championship. But what he did with that title was grand. He went on the Tonight Show 12 times. He was all over the television, guest on several game shows. He was the very first, Bob, he was the very first brand. You know, we have brands now. I mean, that's a marketing term that we use to, that connotates someone's, the power of their personality is so strong that when you say, like him or love him, Donald Trump, you immediately have an image in mind. Well, Amarillo Slim Preston, when you said that name in the 1970s, people thought immediately of a couple of things: a cowboy hat, a gambler, a poker player, Las Vegas. I mean, those are the images that came to mind when you said Amarillo Slim. And that's not a small thing. He put the World Series of Poker on the map.
Very good. So he was kind of a media director before you got the job.
Well, speaking of dead poker players, Bob mentioned that you wrote a book about Stu Unger. And I'm afraid I haven't read the book, but I have seen the movie Stu Unger, High Roller, The Stu Unger Story. Have you seen that movie? And if so, what did you think of it?
Yeah, Michael, I have seen the movie. That came out, I believe, in 2000. My memory's soft on this, but maybe 2004 or 5. That was a relatively minor production. When I say that, it was not done in the way I think it should. This actually came out before my book was released, or the book I co-wrote with Peter Alston, One of a Kind. And it was under budgeted, and I thought rather, I don't want to say poorly planned, because I always think that if you're an artist or if you're a writer, you always respect your fellow artist, if you know what I mean by that. You respect your fellow broadcasters, for example, in most cases. You understand the work that goes in. So I don't want to say anything disparaging about the director, the writer, the actors that were in this film. But I just thought that so much more could have come out of this, and ultimately maybe something will, because the book that I helped write was optioned by Warner Brothers and has been essentially sitting on the shelf for some time, but that's the way it is in Hollywood.
Do you think it portrayed an accurate picture of Stu Unger?
No, I do not, and I'll say why. And I'm not sure that even my book was really the you know, it's very difficult to define a person's character unless you actually physically spend time with them, unless you joke with them and drink with them and eat with them and gamble with them. And you don't really see a person's character until you really spend a considerable amount of time with someone. And I don't think turning pages or watching, say, a two-hour movie version really cannot encapsulate the entire personality of really one of the most interesting people ever to come out of Las Vegas are the New York City gambling scene. So, again, I don't want to knock, you know, another project or say anything that's negative, but Stu Unger is clearly his story, and in my view, you know, hopefully will come to the big screen in another form or fashion.
Good. Probably the most unusual event in this year's World Series of Poker is a $1 million buy-in charity tournament called The Big One for One Drop. Tell us about that.
Well, that's going to be a remarkable event. It's if you're driving, you may want to pull over. What I'm about to say, it costs $1 million to enter. I'll repeat that: $1 million to enter this tournament.
Shaq, are you in this year on that one?
No, I'm about $950,000 short.
Oh, there's a $50,000 entry that you're all set up for the Players Championship. All right.
All right. So, well, you can go out there and stand in a corner and maybe raise some more money, which is actually what a lot of people are doing. People are trying to come up with some very creative ways to raise $1 million. We have about 30 players signed up so far. We may have as many as 40. The cap is 48. It's going to be just a monstrous event. When I say this, it's not just the money, but it's a lot of great poker players that most people would recognize their names if they follow the game, but also people from entertainment, from finance, from business. I mean, this is going to be, in a sense, a who's who of who likes to gamble and come to Las Vegas. It's going to be a very exciting event. It will be televised by ESPN, so if you're not playing, at least you can watch as a spectator. And I think it's going to be something for the history books.
Very good.
Okay. I remember in 2009 at the final table, it was Phil Ivey and eight other people that basically I had never heard of. And they're on the internet casinos, you can make bets, futures bets on who's going to win. And Phil Ivey only had 5% of the chips, but everyone was just enamored with Phil Ivey, especially in the matchup between Phil Ivey and Darvin Moon. And my question is, when it gets to that level, to the final table, do you think there's a significant difference in skill levels, or do you think they're all about roughly equally as good?
Well, I have a definite opinion on that, Michael, but before I answer, I'm going to put you on the hot seat for a minute because you're an actuary. I mean, you do this stuff, you've done this stuff your whole life, and your training is in this. When Phil Ivey was a definitive betting favorite offshore, as you point out, but he only had 5% of the chips, what accounts for that, and would you say that that's ridiculous in a sense? Yeah.
Yes, I do. I'm not the poker expert, but I think that when you get to the top, that there's not going to be a significant difference between the best player and the 100th best player, in my opinion. And at that table, I think that it's mainly a matter of the size of your stack. As I recall, Darwin Moon had about 25% of the chips. But in a matchup between Ivy and Darwin Moon, Phil Ivey was the favorite, which I thought was ridiculous. And I was betting a lot of money on Moon. And neither one of them won, so the bet was a push. But I also had futures bets that Phil Ivey would not win. Mm. And, I had to lay like 8-1 odds, but I thought I should have laid like 19-1.
Yeah, according to what his chip count was. And actually, I pretty much echo everything you said as an expert in this field. I guess my expertise is not so much in numbers, but in the actual play of tournaments and what I've observed at the World Series of Poker for really a couple of decades. And that's that it used to be in this game, and this goes for live games in casinos, and it goes for tournaments as well. It used to be where if a new player, when I say a new player, a player that's unknown to you or unknown to the public, sat down in the chair, and you had no idea who this player was, and maybe he had an accent, or maybe he or she was from somewhere, you're just not a poker area like Las Vegas or Atlantic City or Los Angeles. These are poker centers. Maybe he's from Nebraska or some other place that's not known as a poker haven. It used to be that you just knew that these were bad players or that they were contributing players. They were essentially fish in the pond. And the Sharks gobbled them up. That's the way it used to be. That's not the way it is anymore. Now when a player sits down in a big game and is buying in for $10,000, which is the main event of the World Series of Poker, that shows a level of commitment and certainly sophistication and enough to put on that kind of money and have that kind of confidence in your game. So, as you pointed out, you had Phil Ivey and, quote-unquote, an eight unknown or nobody. I don't know, that's a derogatory term, but certainly players that were not known to the public. Well, again, when somebody walks in and I'm playing poker and I don't know who they are, that's actually a frightening thing in some cases. Sometimes when you have a file cabinet of a reservoir of past knowledge and experience with a player, you kind of know how they're going to play. I've watched some of these players for years. Doesn't mean that I could beat them, but I just know their patterns. I kind of know and have watched them. Boy, some guy comes out of London, I don't know who they are. That is a tough player to play against. And that's what a lot of the pros are now finding out.
I remember back when I was a backgammon player, I had the attitude that if I had never heard of a person, I was probably the favorite. And I just because I knew all the best players and I'd played with them. But, I'm not sure how that – I'm not –
At a time, I thought that was relevant. Maybe it isn't. Okay, changing subjects. The $50,000 Players Championship was named after Chip Reese, the inaugural winner. It's sometimes called the horse event. It's a mixed game format. In past years, sometimes you stayed with a mixed format all the way, and sometimes you changed it to no limit hold'em at the end. It's criticism. Either way you did it, there's criticism. So what's going to be the format this year?
Yeah, I'll rewind the tape just for a minute for those those out there listening have no idea what we just said or what Bob just said about horse and a $50,000 this. And essentially, the biggest buy-in tournament prior to the one-drop million-dollar event, which is the inaugural this year, was the $50,000 buy-in Poker Players Championship. It was kind of like, maybe the Masters is to golf. You know, the Masters is really not the World Championship of golf, but in a sense, it's maybe the most prestigious title. I think we'd agree on that. Like Wimbledon in tennis, the most prestigious title. And while winning the main event of the World Series is ultra prestigious and you're enshrined in the history books forever, winning the Poker Players Championship, which, as you say, costs 50 grand, that in a sense is maybe, to a real poker player, maybe more prestigious. So that being said, the $50,000 horse championship is Hold'em, Omaha, Raz, 7-card stud, and 8 or better. So that's how you get the H-O-R-S-E, which is called horse. In prior years, the very short answer to your question, finally I'm winding down to it, is that in previous years, this was an event televised by ESPN. ESPN tried to introduce these other games, such as Omaha High-Low, 7-card stud, 8 or better. They tried to introduce these to the audience, and I'm just sorry to say this because I'm a real passionate believer in introducing new things to the audience. But unfortunately, they just didn't catch on. People did not understand anything about Omaha. And, you know, the ratings reflected that. So what the network did was insist or recommend that we make it horse, and then when you reach the final table, play No Limit Hold'em, which is television friendly. And we've gone back and forth with the concept back, you know, over the years. I'm not sure there's a right answer, but this year it will be a pure horse event. Will not be No Limit Hold'em. Will be horse, and it's not televised, by the way, which makes this an easy decision for us.
Wow, so it isn't televised. So even though it's the most prestigious, the second or third most prestigious event in the tournament this year, is not going to be televised.
Yeah, and I don't want to speculate. I don't want to take anything away from this title because it is named in honor of a man that I know you know, Chip Reese, the late great Chip Reese, who passed away about 3 or 4 years ago. So it'll always, you know, carry a lot of special significance to everyone who loves the game of poker. But this year, again, we have the one-drop million-dollar charity event, which is started by Guy Liberté, who's the founder, developer of Cirque du Soleil, which is something that's very near and dear to everyone in Las Vegas. You know, this is an event that will now be televised, at least this year.
Okay.
This is the Gambling with an Edge show. Our guest is Nolan Dalla. Simple question. I can understand why women play in separate tournaments in, say, tennis and basketball than men, but why is there a separate tournament for women in poker? And I might ask the same question about chess. I mean, aren't they supposed to be just as good and smart at us at board games?
A great question, and something that we have, had to consider, because you're absolutely right, and we don't ever want to, meaning we at the World Series of Poker, do not ever want to patronize any segment of our of the player base, and certainly women, that's half the population of the world. So I mean, that's a pretty big, you know, we want to keep everyone happy. But the reason we hold a women's world championship is as follows, Michael, and that's because women, this unfortunately is an underrepresented segment in poker. We should have a lot more women playing poker, and unfortunately we don't. We do find that a lot of women don't want to just jump into a $1,500 buy-in event or the main event world championship. But a lot of women, I stress a lot, doesn't mean all, but many women are more comfortable playing amongst themselves. And keep in mind, the World Series of Poker is not just, it's not really the NFL, it's not the NBA, it's not the NHL. It's also a business, and we are providing a service, a competition to thousands of women who come to Las Vegas, who fly specifically to Las Vegas once a year. They wait months to play this, and they fly in just to play this event. And for us to all of a sudden abdicate our responsibility to hold this event and say, well, we're just going to have something for everyone and no more ladies events. I think that would be a great disservice to all those women who make a special effort to come and play in the ladies championship.
On the other hand, have you ever heard any women say that they do think it's patronizing, and even though they may be one of the top women in the world, they will not play in women's events on philosophical grounds?
Yes, you are correct. There are a number of women. I won't say their names, but there are some well-known.
Annie Duke said that on this show a few months ago.
A lot of women have said that. Again, everyone's entitled to their opinion. You know, we're going to have 61 gold bracelet events next year. I'll repeat that, 61. Okay, that's one event that some of the women won't play. There's 60 other events they can play. We are trying to. It's kind of like a smorgasbord. You go to the buffet here at the down the street on the Strip. I don't like everything on the buffet, okay? But boy, I sure am glad that they have hundreds of things to choose from. And that's kind of the way the World Series is. We provide as many different menu options for those who want to satisfy their poker appetites in Las Vegas. And that's what the World Series does. The more options, the better for all players.
What's the over-under number about how many men will enter the women's only event this year?
That's something that was a controversy, Bob, that came about 2 or 3 years ago when I think 12 or 13 gate crashers, I call them gate crashers because I think they violated the spirit of what we're trying to do. A lot of women didn't like it, and I just think it's disrespectful. You can have an opinion. By the way, you can come on a radio show and blast it. You can blog about it. You can write about it. Fine. Try to change it. Fine. I have no problem with people out there on the other side of this issue arguing the other side. That's what it's all about. Debate is good. What I do not like is someone crashing the gate and ruining the celebration of women in poker, this special event for them, and making the ladies feel uncomfortable by their presence. I think that's wrong.
But they will be allowed if they insist.
That's a legal matter that formerly Harrah's Entertainment, now Caesars Entertainment, made a decision a few years ago that it was just simply not worth the potential risk of lawsuits or any number of things that could come about by essentially discriminating, I guess, against players based on gender. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm just telling you what the official policy of Caesars was, and it's probably the right decision. Because here, but the bottom line is, Bob, is that most people get it. They respect this event. This is why this event's lasted since 1978. This event's been going for 33, 34 years now. I mean, this is an event that has a lot of history, a lot of tradition. And I'll tell you what, the World Series is going to do everything they can, everything we can, to protect that for future years.
You have a lot of brand new events this year that have never been done before. It looks to an outsider like you say, well, we've never tried this before. Let's put it out there, see if it sticks. If it does, we'll try it next year too. And if it doesn't, we'll try something else. Is that an oversimplification or is that what happens?
Bob, have you been sitting in on our corporate meetings?
I'm glad I'm not in corporate America. I hated those meetings. But
well, you really pretty much nailed it. Again, this is what, in my view, one of the great things about working for the World Series of Poker in that we're always evolving, we're always changing. No World Series, meaning the 6-7 weeks that we have in Las Vegas, is ever the same from year to year. Some events pass and fall by the wayside. I'll go back just real quick story. You know, if you look at the schedule in the World Series of Poker in the 1970s, you know what there were five-card draw. That was on the menu. There was five-card draw and five-card stud and mixed doubles. There were all these games that, well, I'm sorry to say, most people don't play anymore.
Mixed doubles?
That was an event that was male and female. Actually, Doyle Brunson won one of his bracelets with a lady named Starla Brody. You had to pair. This is a 19, I think it was discontinued in 82. But what an interesting concept this is, to have male and female partners playing in a tournament. So the men had to partner with the ladies. And
sounds interesting. You should
bring
it back.
It does. I hope you bring it back, something like that.
You might have a vote in that. You probably know somebody who works there.
Well, I just want to – back to your question, though, Bob. You're absolutely right that we do introduce new events. We try new things, new twists, new different levels of buy-ins, and new games, and new – I just think that keeps it fresh, alive. Do we hit a home run every year? Is everything successful? No. But in a way, do we want everything to be a home run? Not really. Part of it's about learning and about improving, and that's what the World Series does every year, in my view.
There is a story about you being paid with a $5,000 chip.
Whoa. Now we're going to talk about the Nolan Dallas dirty laundry here. All right, let's go. Bring it on, Michael.
Yes. So I guess someone owed you.
I don't think it's your dirty laundry. I think it's something bad that happened to you. But I mean, dirty laundry implies that you did something.
Yeah, I'm not trying to embarrass you.
Not at all.
But I find stories of casino grievances interesting, and I also think that it brings up some pertinent legal points. So anyway, somebody paid you with a $5,000 chip. You presented it to the MGM Grand. And not only did they not honor it, but they confiscated it, as the story goes. So can you tell us the whole story?
Yes, the story is, and I'll keep it brief. This is in 2006 or 7. I've forgotten the years. 4 or 5 years ago. I do a lot of sports betting. You know, you gentlemen have been around this town a long time. You know how our culture is. I don't want to carry around stacks of, you know, bundles of $100. I mean, it's not like I have this problem very often, but I mean, I don't want to carry around bundles of cash. So a lot of times when we're
walking around. Yeah, I hate it when
around,
I have to carry
it's
around
just so, yes, it's so cumbersome.
I just hate that.
Right. I mean, my suitcase is so full of, you know, whatever.
Yeah, they're heavy. Yeah. Okay.
Not that I ever had this problem, but let me tell you, one time I had a winner, okay, just one time, and I got paid essentially a $5,000 chip from somebody who owed me some money. Long story short was I took the $5,000 chip, which was a real chip, over to the MGM because it said MGM Grand on the chip. Huh. Good place to go cash it. Wrong. The cashier said, Mr. Dowell, I think I had to present an ID, said, why, you know, where did you get this? And I don't believe in lying. I just don't like lying. I you know, a lot of people in retrospect have said, oh, Nolan, you should have said you wanted the crap table. You should have said you did. What did I do wrong here? I collected a chip from someone, a real, you know, and I go to the MGM Grand to cash the chip. Well, they not only refused to honor the chip, they actually confiscated it. And then, I guess, fast-forwarding this somewhat, I went to the gaming board, got absolutely, let me get back up. I went to the Nevada Gaming Board on Washington Avenue, north of downtown, and I was astounded at the lack of respect and consideration I, as a citizen of the state of Nevada, a taxpaying citizen who trusts those who are in positions of power and essentially work for the government, which the Nevada Gaming Board does, they are entrusted with the responsibility to protect this industry and the patrons who come and visit these establishments. I am a gambler. I've loved this town, and I love what I do. I did nothing wrong. So when I took my grievance to the Nevada Gaming Board, I was expecting quick, swift action, and I got just the opposite. And the Nevada Gaming Board did absolutely nothing for me on my behalf, didn't even really give me the courtesy of a very short meeting, didn't even take notes. And I guess the bottom line is, after all of this mess where I'm essentially out $5,000, which I'm out $5,000 as of right now, the MGM Grand, that chip is somehow in their system floating around, and they're $5,000 richer for what they've done to me. And I think I'm more angry, or more disappointed maybe is the right word, at the Nevada Gaming Board, because what the MGM Grand did was wrong. What the Nevada Gaming Board did was just absolutely, utterly irresponsible as a government agency entrusted to protect the public.
Did either the MGM or the Gaming Board give you an option saying something like, if you present proof that a legitimate player gave you this chip, then we'll honor it? Or if you could, I don't know, have some sort of an evidence trail that the chip was legitimately earned by somebody.
I did that, actually, and I gave you the short version. Anybody wants the longer version, if I can point to a site, 2+2. 2+2 is one of the top poker sites.
Glance,
2+2,
yes.
Correct. I discussed and wrote a very long, really I wanted to chronicle this experience. I wanted it to go down in the history books, I wanted there to be a record of what happened. And so I wrote in detail about everything I went through. I brought the person in, they showed their card. I mean, I went through all the steps. But here's the key. Michael, I never lied. I could have lied and I could have got paid just like that.
Maybe.
And I think I would have been. I think I would have been paid. Because, you know, the burden upon is on the casino to prove that you didn't win at the craps tables or whatever it was. Anyway, the bottom line is I told the truth. I did the right thing. I took a chip that was legitimate, mm-hmm. say currency, but certainly something that.
But
had,
that was part of the point. Is it isn't?
Yeah. Oh no. I will concede. I will concede this. Certainly, you know, these chips we all now learn, and this story came out in the Review Journal that was written about in the Sun, because I went to the press. I wanted someone to be shamed over this experience, and it sure wasn't going to be me. I thought that by going to the press, that would certainly cast a light on something that a lot of people just don't know, that these gaming chips, as you just said, kind of touched on, is that they are not currency. You're absolutely right, Bob.
So, Richard Munchkin and I were talking about this several months ago on the air, and we came to the conclusion that don't take larger than $1,000 chips. So, I mean, just like refuse to take them because they have the problem cashing them sometimes, and just being burned once hurts.
Yeah, that you're. I'll just echo that very quickly. I don't mean this to sound ludicrous or in a bragging way. Okay, I don't want to make that point. But I actually had a lot of $1,000 chips as well from the MGM Grand, and I tried to go in there, and they would obviously, you know. And by the way, I went in a different time, right? And they wouldn't even cash those flags either. So I actually went I'll say this. I went through Confederates. I said, "Would you guys cash this?" And they were cashed, into the poker room. But again, you're right that anything above a $500 flag or chip is scrutinized, certainly by that property.
And I once had some yellow $1,000 chips that were in an old style from a casino here, and they cashed three of them, and I was cashing them, you know, in small batches, and then they refused me. And so I took them to the sports book where I bet anyway, and they accepted them without argument. So that's a good tip to get rid of chips if you have that problem.
Yeah, if you want to bet sports books for $1,000 at a time. All right. We've been teasing people when you're coming on and telling them that this year in the World Series of Poker, you've done away with the November 9. And we haven't asked you about that. And so the last several years, you've had a November 9, which means the main event goes until you get 9 players, and then you wait 4 months, and in early November, they come back and they play it off in a couple days. So you're not going to do that this year. How come?
Well, there's an important date coming up in early November this year, which, I should know the date, but I don't. But it's the U.S. presidential election is the date that we would normally hold the final table of the World Series of Poker.
This is the World Series of Poker.
Well, I won't make any political comments here, but that's just something we just don't want to go up against. We've been up against Monday Night Football and, you know, World Series of Baseball, which is, you know, also, you know, that goes into October, certainly. And 1 year, I think it went even.
So you're going to do it the last week of October.
That's correct.
So it'll be an October 9. Now, October 8 has a much better ring than October 9. Did you ever consider making it October 8 this year?
No. And Bob, these are just simply clever marketing considerations. November 9 has a great ring to it,
yes,
as does
October
8. But a final table of the World Series of Poker is 9, N-I-N-E, 9 players, and it will stay that way, no matter if it's in December, no matter if it's in January. It will not be the January, I can't think of a number, but you know, you can't have the January 1 or the, you know, just not the way it works, Bob, but...
I understand your level of flexibility on this. I got that loud and clear. All right. Thank you, Nolan. We very much appreciate you taking time to be with us tonight. We have commercials and a few more things to talk about. If you could stick around, we may have a time for a question or two at the end. If you need to go, that would be fine, too.
Nice to be with both of you, and thanks to your listeners for listening to the best radio show in Las Vegas.
All right, thank you.
We have to invite him again. All right, Michael, what did we learn tonight?
Yes, I feel very buttered up. Oh, I learned a lot of stuff. Poker is not my strong point, so I did not hear the story of the $1,000 chip before, so that was very interesting. And,
did you know about Amarillo Slim?
I didn't. I know that he was one of the longtime great poker players, but did not know anything about him until just now.
Yeah, there's sad events happened in this decade, actually in the last decade, but they did honor him last year at the World Series of Poker, which I thought was pretty cool. What's happening on the Wizard websites, Michael?
Oh, thanks for asking.
You're welcome.
At the Wizard of Macau, I just added a review of the Altira Casino. at the Wizard of Odds. The main thing that I just added is another slot machine deconstruction. There is a game called Blazing Sevens, and I know there's lots of them, and so I'm referring to the video Five Real Blazing Sevens. I played it for about half an hour at the Fremont Casino. I recorded every spin. Then I took it home, uploaded the videos to YouTube, got a couple of volunteers to transcribe every single outcome into a spreadsheet. Then I tried to piece the real stripping together and then calculate all the odds of the game and to determine what the game paid, which as usual was around 90%. And what I think makes this interesting is that when it comes to the world of gambling, probably more than half the revenue comes from reeled slot machines. But gambling writers like us have a hard time addressing them because the odds are not quantifiable. But now they are. If you have the patience to record your play and put together the real stripping and calculating all the odds, you can determine what the rules are and what you're up against. And this is the third time I've done it, and I plan to keep doing it.
Interesting. I have a tough time writing about a video poker game that returns 98%. And it's like, if it's not, you know, 99% or better, so that with the slot club and promotion as a chance to be a good game to play, it's like it's hard for me to bring myself to write about it. And so the idea of studying real hard to analyze whether a game is 89 or 90 or 91, it would be against my religion to work on that, I think.
I think both of us have the same goal of trying to make the public better gamblers, but I think I take it from a different perspective sometimes, and I don't like to beat my audience over the head with advice like saying don't play slot machines, but I feel that if I explain to them how they really work, it might demystify them, debunk some of the myths, and they might wake up and realize what a horrible bet this is. Maybe I should be playing video poker instead.
Well, maybe so. Maybe they should read your website and read my books and buy 9 copies of my software. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. In May, they're having a Chevy a Day promotion where they're giving away your choice of one of 3 $25,000 Chevrolets every day. The drawing's at 8:20 every night. You have 24 hours to claim it. 4 additional players will earn $250 in Chevron gas cards each night. If you claim the Chevy within 10 minutes, you get a bonus package worth about $5,000, which is the taxes, the registration, the dealer fees, and $2,000 in gas. If you don't want the car, you can take $15,000 in cash instead. And if you want a more expensive car, the casino will pay $25,000 or so towards whatever car Finley Chevrolet will sell you. You earn your tickets playing slots or video poker. $1,250 coin in a day earns you the maximum number of tickets. Your tickets stay in the drum, although you only can win one car in the month. Last year, they actually had one guy who was drawn first twice, and so he only got one, though. All right. They also Since the Kentucky Derby is on Saturday, tomorrow night from 6 to 7, they are having a seminar talking about the Kentucky Derby and the various horses in it from several of the prime handicappers. The main reason Michael and I didn't talk about the Kentucky Derby tonight is we don't have anything intelligent to say about it. The Palms. The play, earn, and win at the Palms for the first half of the month is related to Mother's Day, which includes TJ Maxx gift cards, edible arrangements gift cards, scarves, perfumes, other things. They're going to have the normal swipe and win on Tuesdays and Sundays with a twist. You need to play 100 points video poker or 25 points in slots to get the swipe rather than get it for free. And in addition to the nominal gifts, you get an additional one, additional card, which has a letter on it for Palms, P-A-L-M-S. You get one of those. If you collect all 5 letters, you get $500. There will be
potential of 45 people who get $500. Now, you have to be at least five of the Sundays and Tuesdays to have any chance to get the five. And even with a maximum of nine, it's going to require a considerable amount of luck to do it. But it's possible to do it. They have, on Thursdays, is their senior day. They're having blackjack tournaments where the entries are $15 or $10 for rebuys. Winner takes all. So the house has no hold on that. And you're playing against a bunch of old folks. So you can do that. Also at the Palms, tomorrow their race and sports book opens up. It's going to be a Cantor race and sports book extension. And the room is going to include the poker room. So the poker room is moving into this race and sports book area. The grand opening is tomorrow afternoon, just in time for the Kentucky Derby. So I suspect Mike and I will check out that sports book in the next week and let you know what you think of it. It is a state of the art. All right. Next week, our guest is going to be Bob Nersessian. Bob Nersessian is a gambling lawyer, so gambler's lawyer. So if you get into gambling problems in Las Vegas or elsewhere, he's the one to talk to. So he's been on the show a couple times before. I think we're probably going to ask him about Nolan Dahl's $5,000 chip. The week after that, we have Roger Snow, who why don't you tell us who he is?
Roger Snow is, I believe he's a vice president at ShuffleMaster. His job is new table game product. He's the one that markets their table games and decides what new table games you're likely to see in the casino. And some of his games he invents himself, and some of them he gets from other game inventors, many of whom I know personally. And one thing we'll be talking about is yesterday they had an event at ShuffleMaster where they invited about 10 different game inventors to present their game, and they hired a whole bunch of dealers to judge these games. So, and I was one of the game inventors, so I dealt my game to 15 different dealers, and they all filled out a score for my game as well as every other game that they saw. And at the end, all the scores were announced, and some people were very disappointed. They put a good part of their lives into inventing these games, and basically they got very lousy scores. So we're going to be talking about that event, and there's a lot of chatter on my forum about it too, and just about the whole business of new table games in general and Roger Snow himself.
Do we have to wait 2 weeks to find out how well your game did, or are you going to tell us before that?
My game, I'm proud to say, came in third, and I only missed second place by the smallest possible margin. And the two games that finished ahead of me were ShuffleMaster games, invented by Roger Snow. And some people might allege that...
The fix is in, huh?
Some people are alleging that. I'm not alleging that myself. But some people are saying that maybe the judges were biased towards the person paying them. And there's a huge controversy on my website about it right now, so we'll definitely talk about that. But my game, by the way, was called Three Card Mulligan Poker, and I hope that you will see that in a casino soon.
Will ShuffleMaster, were you trying to sell it to ShuffleMaster?
Yes, I was, and I...
You'll talk about that.
Yeah, we will talk about that. I'm not sure if I should talk about it right now.
All right, good. Now, a couple weeks ago, Michael and I have a little bit different attitude on what to play in a casino, where I am really religious that if I don't have the edge, I won't play. He told me that sometimes there will be a big six wheel, which I don't have the number off the top of my head, but it's something like 20% against the player. But it's usually run by a very pretty girl, half clothed. And so he thinks it can be positive EV in some sense for him to play a big six wheel. Now, I just do not understand how this can happen. So, Michael, tell us about this.
Well, this really only happened once. And by the way, the house advantage on the $1 bet is 11%, which is the lowest it gets in that game. But I was having dinner with a friend, and he wanted to do some gambling afterwards. And there was a very pretty girl at the big six wheel, and he wanted to play it. And you did not have to twist my arm very hard to get me to bet $1 at a time to have the pleasure of chatting with this lovely young woman.
So so basically you're paying 11 cents per spin to
talk to a pretty girl, which is a good price.
So you would think anything under 18 cents would have been a good price, I guess.
Maybe that's about where I would draw the line. But I would not play 6-5 blackjack no matter how pretty the dealer was, I think.
Really? I think, good. We're actually going to have a lady in here in a couple months, your friend Angela, who used to deal in a party pit. And they have these real pretty girls, and 6-5 blackjack is the norm there. And there's an interview on YouTube, which I thought you said sometimes you would play that. Maybe I misunderstood.
Yes, I'm hoping to have Angela on the show probably sometime in June. She was also the model featured in all my gambling instructional videos, and she was indeed a pleasure pit dealer at the Golden Gate. And I asked her about this in one of the interviews I did with her on my website, and she said that that it's legitimate to only pay 6-5 because the player is getting more entertainment value, and she called it a certain kind of tax that I would get bleeped if I said on the air, but it rhymes with tax. And
when I said it last week, he thought I said tic-tac, and so he didn't bleep that, so I just...
and she has a valid point. You know, you are getting more entertainment value, and but the Golden Gate and the D Casino, formerly the Fitzgeralds, have pleasure pit blackjack that pays 3-2. So why would I only accept 6-5 elsewhere?
Maybe the girls at the Palms are prettier than the ones at Golden Gate.
And the Playboy girls at the Palms are outstanding. And as we mentioned on a previous show, they're out on the main casino floor now.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And it's 6-5.
Yep. Yep. Now, at a $5 minimum, I'll grant you that would be worth it. But I don't think it's 5. It's probably 25.
I don't know.
Or 15 at least.
I don't know. So it's what, 1.5% edge against you on 6-5? Is that about right?
No, it's closer to 2%. I think it's 1.8 if the rest of the rules are good, which often they're not.
Okay, so call it 2%. So that on a $5 bet, 2% is a dime?
Yes. And if you assume...
But we already established it's worth more than 11 cents.
Yes, but I also think of it as 100 hands per hour. Is that's going to cost me $10 an hour?
Now, surely you can make the game slower than that. If you're talking to these girls, and they're you can have them deal slower than that.
But lots of times when I'm in the presence of a pretty girl, I just don't know what to say.
Yeah, so you're not getting your 10 cents a hand worth.
Exactly.
So maybe you should practice before you go so you can get the full 10 cents a hand value out of it.
I should probably practice on the uglier girls and to build up my confidence.
All right, so I don't know. I got a few seconds left, so go out and hit lots of royal flushes. We'll see you next week.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.